This episode is brought to you by ICMP, the Institute of Contemporary Music Performance. ICMP is the UK's premier music education provider with top student satisfaction scores and students from across the globe. ICMP offers degrees, masters, and short courses in disciplines spanning the music industry, including performance, production, songwriting, business, marketing, and artist development. Discover your place in the music industry with ICMP at www.icmp.ac.uk/apply.
What am I saying again?
This is MPW.
MPW.
The podcast
with your host, Zylo Aria.
Cool.
A podcast about music production
for the everyday musician,
where we learn from experienced studio engineers and each other.
Sophie Daniels is the Professor of Songwriting based in the Institute of Contemporary Music Performance in London. She's also the Principal Fellow of the Higher Education Academy. At ICMP, she is responsible for creating all of their higher education programs in the music performance and creation areas and is dedicated to combining quality higher education with expert industry training in the contemporary songwriting space.
Hello, Sophie. Great to have you on this podcast. And how are you doing?
That's my pleasure. Nice to meet you. I'm very well, thank you.
That's good. It's lovely to have you here. So we are going to be talking about the creative process of songwriting, and I will get into that shortly. But before we do that, I would love to learn a little bit more about where did your career start for you and how did you get to where you are today?
Gosh, well, I'll try to be as brief as I can, because I think, like perhaps a lot of women in the music industry, it's been a very twisty, turny, interesting journey. But also, you know, I think that's very typical in the creative industries. So I started writing songs when I was a child. When I was just 3 or 4, I was unusually interested in the content of songs, shall we say. I was asking quite odd questions about song lyrics and surrounded by music in my house, and I learned the piano, and I was always very interested in making things. I played instruments, but I was less interested in playing music that existed and more interested in making my own. And then I went through school studying music and English and drama predominantly. I did a degree in music and English. There were no BAs in songwriting at that time, so I did a degree, joint honours in music and English. And then I went to work in the music industry pretty much straight out of university and worked for the BBC, a live events company, and then major record labels. I worked for Sony Music, and then I went to work for what is now Syco, was then S Records, Simon Cowell's UK record label. And then I quit that job rather surprisingly and for me dramatically when I was 30 and decided to go into creativity and education, which is what I've been doing for about 20 years. And I was approached to teach songwriting at a time when almost no one was teaching songwriting by somebody that I knew that was a vocal teacher. And I had teaching experience, and I was doing nothing other than writing songs. So I had no experience teaching songwriting. So I was encouraged to begin in that. And that was the start of this amazing new career that I've just really loved and cherished. I set up one of the first 1-year accredited courses in songwriting in 2007. And in the early noughties, I was doing a huge amount of non-accredited songwriting teaching, evening courses, summer schools, and teaching all over the UK and then internationally. And then we did this 1-year course. I then wrote, delivered the first BA in songwriting in the UK, and then got into researching songwriting quite meaningfully, was very passionate at the place where I work about gender equality, because just like the music industry, I was surrounded by men, but unlike the music industry, it was a little friendlier and I felt able to change it. And then 9 years ago, I created our master songwriting, all of this, of course, with other people, all working collaboratively with teams of people. And then 18 months ago, I became an associate professor of songwriting. I am the first female professor of songwriting the UK's had, and one of only 2 at the moment. So it's quite an unusual job. And I absolutely love it. I feel very privileged and proud. I'm also a director of an organization called the F-List, which is a community interest company which has been set up to further gender equality in music in the UK. And I've been doing that since 2020.
Okay. So lots of different parts to your career there. And so
absolutely,
many different experiences across labels and, you know, events and education as well. And it sounded like there was a particular incident or moment that happened that cause this change into education. Is that something you're comfortable talking about?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's one of two kind of major life events that have really formed my career. And, you know, I mean, my career is very holistic as well. I think it can be problematic that we love what we do and we work a lot, if not all of the time. But it's also a wonderful thing. But yeah, referring to what happened when I was 30, what happened was that I was actually working at Sony Music as a product manager, and I was very happy, having a great time. I mean, major labels at that time were not without their problems, and particularly for young women. But I was really enjoying myself. It was a diverse place and it was a lot of fun. And I did feel, to some extent, empowered. And then I was approached, like a lot of people were at the time, to go into a recruitment process for that job working at S Records. And I was told repeatedly over a very long recruitment period, I was told, this is the best job in the music industry. This is the job that everybody wants, until I was really sort of utterly convinced of that point. And so then when I got that job and found myself to be really unhappy, I was around peg in a square hole, and everything around me was very uncomfortable. I took a long time to leave, I think partly because, let's just say, I took the gauntlet that was thrown down by someone on the first day. But yeah, I just didn't fit there. I was too interested in creative matters, not sufficiently interested in commerce. I left, and that was actually quite miserable at the time, but looking back on it, extremely empowering. And since that moment, I have been walking a straight line away from the thing that interests me least about music, which is commerce, and towards the thing that interests me most, which is creativity. And so I'm extremely grateful to the universe, I suppose, for what happened.
Mm, yeah. It's funny, sometimes these really painful situations are maybe what we need to actually find the thing that we really love and we're meant to be doing. So perhaps that drastic move wouldn't have happened if you weren't so unhappy in your job.
Absolutely. I think these things, you know, there are so many examples from the songwriting creative community that I am privileged to inhabit that tell us that. And I think it's, you know, I'm sure it's comparable across other industries and other lives, but for creatives, I think it's particularly true. And I think it's really useful and empowering for us to be able to walk towards and examine the things that that trouble us. Mm. One of my favorite quotes about creativity and creative process is from Tori Amos. And she said, if it's too loud, turn it up. And I think, turn up and listen to the thing that is really in your ears and tune into it and then use it.
Lovely. That's good. Thank you for sharing. So can you tell me a random fact about yourself that not many people in the industry know about you?
Yeah. My life and my work has been quite open. So people know a lot of things about me, but one thing that almost no one knows about me is that I play the bassoon, which is a lovely instrument. And I mean, I don't actively play it now because I don't own one and they're worth a lot of money and I wouldn't have much use for bassoon playing. But I was very passionate about classical music when I was a kid, about all music really. And I was in orchestras and bands. And when I was 11, I looked almost exactly as I do now, which was a bit weird when I was 11. Yeah, my school said, look, you need to learn the bassoon because the person who played it has just left and then you can play it for 7 years. So I did and I loved it.
Okay. That's a good random fact if no one has found that out about you. So that's great. Thank you for sharing. So getting into the creative process of songwriting, can you tell me, when it comes to songwriting, is there a process that you typically follow?
Well, as you know, I teach songwriting. I teach in particular creative process for songwriting. I started a module on my master's program in that almost 10 years ago now. It was quite unusual at the time. And it's something that I'm very invested in and have researched a lot. And I put all that as background because I think when one researches and learns a lot about something, it does change your relationship with it. And it's been very interesting to me how that has changed and reframed my thinking about my own creative process. I think it's really important to look at creative process. I think it's very important, first of all, to research it, to read about it, to engage with it, to think about it. If we go back in time a little bit, the artists from Canon, not all, but many male artists, and I think a collusion of the kind of capitalism around songwriting, were very much bearing down upon people, saying that we shouldn't talk about it and it should all be very mysterious and a dark art. And that's simply not the case, particularly with everything that we are learning now about the brain and about human beings. So I think I would just say, you know, really research and find out about your own creative process. And furthermore, invest in and experiment with different creative processes so that you have them at your disposal. So whenever I approach making something now, particularly a song, I am very open in the initial stages. I think, okay, which creative process do I want to engage with? How do I want to do this? Because I know there isn't one way. I know there isn't a right or a wrong way. But I know that some processes will serve me well and some will not. And I know that if I want to, as I did when I was 16, because I didn't think about it, I know I'll sit down at my beloved piano with a bottle of red wine and write a song on my own. And that's one way of doing it. And that's a way that I'm happy to do now. Maybe not a whole bottle now. But also, I know that there are other ways. It's not only that way for me. I mean, let's say, for example, I had a difficult relationship with alcohol. I would never be able to write songs again. So that would not be very helpful. I need to know that there's other things that I can go to. Yesterday, I began writing a new song for my own record that I'm recording this year with a friend of mine. And we did 3 hours of research and talking to go from what I thought the song was about. And I thought that the song was going to be a letter that I wanted to write to Jane Austen. And then we researched a bunch of stuff together and talked about it. And we ended up utterly clear on what the song was about, which is that actually it is about activism and it is about whoever holds the pen also to some extent holds the sword. And we discovered the first woman who ever wrote anything, who is also the first person who ever wrote anything. And we are just simply writing a song about that person. 3 hours of research and talking. We didn't sing a note. We didn't write a single lyric. And now we'll sit down and we will write the song probably in an afternoon together, maybe with a glass of wine. So for me, a completely different creative process than I would have engaged in when I started out. But I might also, you know, go for a walk in a park or have somebody else play an instrument, or I might play an instrument, or I might start with words or melody that have come to me that I've captured on my phone. Everybody starts in different places. I would just say be flexible, take control and have different go-tos and know that nothing is right or wrong for you or anyone else.
Mm. And when you were talking about different creative processes and researching yourself and what works for you, is there somewhere that you would go or suggest someone goes to find processes to try, or how do you go about doing that research?
Yeah, so there's a number of books that I would recommend and I recommend all the time that are on our reading lists. And for me, looking cross-disciplinary, so not just within songwriting, not just within music, but within the creative arts generally, has been very important. It's been very important, I don't need to get into the detail on this now, also for gender inequality. I mean, all of the books that were on the reading lists in music education when I joined art college were written by white men, and that there's nothing wrong with white men making music, but it is a rather narrow lens. And so to look outside of that, we needed to look at books written about other art forms and other creative practices. And so many things are transferable. Particularly for me, I found a lot of books about creative writing per se. So with novelists and poets and script writers and so on. Probably still my favourite book about creative process is from 2016, and it's Elizabeth Gilbert's book, Big Magic Creative Living. It's a very accessible book. It talks very kind of openly about creativity. It doesn't put any rules or any fixtures in the sand, but it also talks quite pragmatically and quite logistically, and it talks about your relationship with your art. But I also really recommend everybody to go and research finding out about the creative process of the persons who make things that they love. So for me, I've read Tori Amos's book Resistance, I've read books by Sarah Bareilles, I've read books written by Vivian Westwood about her creative process, and I've written books written by Dolly Parton. So I would say make yourself a family tree of artists, not just music, who you love, and find out how they made their work and get tips from there, as well as studying the art and craft of songwriting, which is important. But you need to really empower yourself as a creative individual.
Okay. That's a great tip there, to learn from the creative processes of the creatives that you love. So that's...
And indeed, the ones that inspired them. That's why I say make a family tree. So when I research Dolly Parton, I research, well, who does Dolly love and who inspired her? And then I go... Less is written, of course, because partly when they were in music history. But I would then go to her inspirations and look for documentaries about them. And not just books, of course, because books don't suit everyone. So also podcasts and documentaries and radio shows and so on.
Okay, that's great. That's a good thing to think about. So when it comes to, so say you are looking at the artists that you love and their creative process and perhaps want to take some inspiration from their music as well, is there a way that you think is useful to use that as a creative process?
Yeah, I think work that inspires you and that you relate to, and also that has been made by people who you identify with, is really powerful. And it's powerful in terms of the holistic big picture, how they made it, but it's also powerful in terms of the individual aspects about it, such as lyrics and music and instrumentation and arrangement. Language, for example, is something that we teach in songwriting. There are so many words just in the English language, for example, that we can use to describe when we write our lyric. You know, we might initially write a first draft of a song, and in some situations that might come out quite quickly, quite fluidly, and it's our first draft. And then when we look over it, we might say, oh, is that word really the right word to use? We look at the language. In fact, my son, who is 10, was writing his pop punk song at the weekend for his pop punk band. And there was a few words in there that were a bit polite. And I said to him, there were particular words like spoil and I can't remember the other word, but I said, you know, don't you want it to be a bit, you know, you sound a bit polite, and this is an angry war chant you told me about a human apocalypse. Sorry, Cosmo, for spoiling content of your song. And so the language within it needs to be less polite, a bit more aggressive. And so we just went away and put Green Day on, who were his favourite artists, and just kind of got a bit of more of a language palette. So that's who inspire him. And I think that's why I would say that all of this links back to equality as well, because we need to go and listen to the work of people that we love and identify with and think, I will use my own language to write my song. And that will make you creatively more free, and it will give you more of a unique artistic identity. And you can say the same about rhyme, to give a crude example. If you're writing a song that you want to share with primary school children, and I did that recently, you really have to use perfect rhymes, because primary school children do everything in perfect rhyme, you know, which is, you know, school and pool and meat and feet. That there's so much within primary school which is perfect rhyme. But if you're writing a country folk song about your life, perfect rhyme is going to be a bit odd. It's going to sound a bit too convenient. You won't sound like you're being honest. And so you would use half rhyme. So looking at examples from artists that you personally love and have chosen to be in your life, and looking at whether it's melody or whether it's use of language or lyric writing, and being inspired by that is really helpful. And it also helps you lean into your individuality as a creative.
Mm, Okay. Okay. So that's a great thing to think about, of finding inspiration from the artist in so many different ways, whether it's the lyric or the feel and how that impacts the lyrics and structures as well. So speaking about structures specifically, what are your thoughts on song structures? And I guess with music today, even with pop music, we are seeing a lot of change in this, and structures seem to be a bit more unconventional. Songs are getting shorter. Do you have any thoughts on, is sticking to a structure good, or kind of just trying to be more free with it?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I find structure fascinating. So my advice, a bit like earlier, would be absolutely study strong song structure. I mean, I studied it on my own time by listening actively to songs, to all songs, not just to songs that I love, but to everybody's songs, just analysing and critiquing them myself and writing out charts of the sections. But there's something that you can study that we teach and that a lot of different authors have written about. One of the best, I mean, it's quite hard to get hold of this book now, but there's a book by somebody called Ralph Murphy, who was a great mentor to me, which is called Murphy's Laws of Songwriting. He talks about song structure. Professor Patterson also has written a lot about song structure. He's written numerous great books. They're all great books to get if you're studying this on your own time. But there are actually only a handful, about five or six set song structures, which persist and have persisted over time and across genres. And when you learn those and have a go at writing within them, even if it's not natural to you, have a go at consciously saying, right, I'm going to structure my song like this, and I'm going to make sure that I write my song in this way, you will learn from that exercise. I mean, this is actually somewhere where it's really helpful to study the songs of people that you don't particularly like, where you would say, look, you know, I know that, let's say, you know, Bob Dylan, or maybe it's Take That, just thinking about two people are very interesting in terms of their structure. They're not particularly to my taste. I haven't listened to a lot of their music. Why is it that they're so successful? And let me just listen to their structures. You'll learn a lot from that. And when we teach songwriting, we're very fond of saying, tools, not rules, which is a quote from Simon Hawkins, who's an author on songwriting. But you must know how to learn your tools in order to break the rules in songwriting, would be my advice. I mean, there are brilliant and extraordinary artists who have just, you know, broken all. I mean, for example, the 1975s are very innovative with their pop song structures, but they also write conventional song structures. There are so many examples of innovative artists, but usually in order to create a new and innovative structure, by which I mean not one of the five or six that persist, it's challenging to do that. And you can spend an awful lot of time trying to make a song work, particularly, as you say, if you want to make a short song, short pieces of work. A structure is imperative to making sure that they're balanced and they work effectively. But if you're determined that you want to have an innovative structure, then study the people who make great innovatively structured pop songs, the 1975s, Radiohead.
Okay. That's good thing to think about there as well. And do you have any tips for artists for overcoming the mental barriers of perfectionism and allowing themselves to let go? I know a lot of students that we speak to kind of get stuck in the process of writing because they're immediately thinking of what's the audience going to think and all of that, which can stop them.
Yeah, I do. It's something that I'm very interested in. Again, the first thing I would say would be to really think, to research, to read, to think, well, what is writer's block actually? Because in my view, writer's block is a nonsense. It's something that doesn't exist. And I find that, and I find sharing that with my students who are studying with writer's block very empowering. It is the case that sometimes we don't have anything to write about. It is the case that sometimes we're not feeling great. It is the case that sometimes we cripple ourselves with worrying about writer's block. Writer's block is rather like anxiety, which is something which a great deal of people struggle with today, including particularly creatives, in that the more that we give it a role in our lives, the bigger the role it takes. And the more that we say, hang on a minute, let me shine a spotlight upon this thing and think about what it is, the more it goes away. Or rather, I should have said, maybe the more we are afraid of it, the more we give it a persona. And again, Liz Gilbert in her book, Big Magic Creative Living, is brilliant on this. You know, she talks about recognizing your fear and saying, okay, you can come with me if you like. I know you're coming on the journey, but you're in the back seat and you are not having the steering wheel. So I recognize that we're afraid, but you're not coming on the journey and having a say in what's happening. Because a lot of what we're doing as creatives is about embracing uncertainty. But of course, there are so many different tips and techniques that you can have on a day-to-day basis that help you with things like writer's block. So for example, free writing, which is something that a lot of songwriting teachers recommend, which is where you're just sitting down with a pen and paper and just writing. You know, you might set a clock, you might pick a particular thing that you want to write about, and you're just free writing for, let's say, 5 or 10 minutes. Professor Patterson has got an even better, more distinct version of this that he calls object writing that you can read about. It's a very small piece of reading that you need to do there, where you write about a specific object. This is to actually focus on all the senses around something. And Morning Pages, which is from a book by Julia Cameron called The Artist's Way, which is another great book, where you get up every day and you write. So a lot of these techniques are saying, let's not worry about writing a song. Let's just get things moving. I mean, I think my other really key advice that I always give to songwriters who are starting out is capture your thoughts and your ideas as and when they come. So increasingly people will do that with a phone or, you know, a recording device. I would still be minded to do that with a little book. Typically the book's a little, this is rather a large one, but yeah, I've just shown you, but get yourself a little beautiful book and a pen and keep them with you. And whenever you have an idea, write it down in that little book, because not only do you have that book to come back to when you think you have writer's block, but equally as important, there's a process that's happening when you capture your ideas. You might be at the cinema or out for a drink or whatever you're doing, and you capture that idea. You are saying to yourself, my ideas are worth me capturing and they matter and I have them. So just hold on a moment, friend. You know, we can come back to our conversation in a moment because I need to write my idea down. All of this is to nurture your ideas and your creativity.
That's beautiful. And yeah, I think I hear about the voice note a lot and using your phone, but like you said, the physical process of writing it down in a book that means something to you can be so beneficial to have to flick over whenever you're feeling.
It really is. A lot of the research that I'm doing at the moment leads me to believe very powerfully that one of the things about songs that makes them unique as an art form is that they're very human. We have been engaging in song since we existed as a race. It is, in my view, very intrinsic to being human that we create song. And it is for that reason. There's a lot of research on whether we do things, you know, in a kind of digital or an analog way. And, you know, as an analogy for recording it or writing it down with a pen. But I think bringing the human back to the process is always really helpful, and it always encourages song and song ideas.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So now we are on to our speed quiz, Sophie.
Okay.
Are you ready for it?
Yeah, I'm ready.
So it's 5 quick fire this or that question. So first one, roller coasters or water slides?
Oh gosh, I hate anything like that. So water slides without a doubt.
Animals or people?
Oh, it has to be humans. I'm obsessed with human and what it means to be human.
Yeah. Okay. Headphones or speakers?
Oh, I don't really like headphones. So speakers. I don't really like anything that holds me in.
Okay. Festival or rave?
Oh, again, I don't really like either, but festival, because I like to be outside. Give me a festival in the trees.
Okay. Digital or analog?
Analog.
Okay. That was maybe not the speediest quiz we've had, Sophie.
Sorry.
It was good. We had some explanations there, which is nice.
You always get more words than you bargain for when you interview a songwriter, I would imagine.
No. It's great. So coming to our top tips then, can you tell me what is your one top career tip?
Oh, gosh. I could give so many, but you have to trust yourself. You have to trust your own instincts and trust yourself in an industry which is always saying, you know, but what about this? But what about that? You have to always bet on yourself. That's why we do it, right? Whether it's songwriting or presenting, whatever it is, we are betting on ourselves. Just keep doing that.
I love that. It can be so hard, especially when you are maybe new to the industry and you can't really hear the voice inside you to really do that, but it's a good reminder. And what is your one top self-care tip?
Well, I am very interested in self-care. I mean, I'm almost evangelical about yoga, and particularly hot yoga. Hot yoga has saved my life on multiple occasions. Okay. Because yoga does that thing that dancing does as well. It connects the body and the mind. It encourages the relationship between the body and the mind. In the yoga room, when your body's failing, you can use your mind to heal it. And when your mind is traumatized or broken, you can use your body to heal it. Yeah, I go to yoga at least 5 times a week.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's very good. I actually grew up with yoga as a child from my Indian background, and mum used to teach it, but I've never done the hot yoga. And I am curious to try it actually.
Well, all yoga I think is fabulous. Yeah, I grew up with it as well, differently to you, with a hippie white mother. But but I think all yoga is fabulous. Hot yoga is obviously a bit more of a modern invention, but the sweat's good.
I'm sure. Yeah. No, I try and just do it once a week. I haven't got to 5 times like you, but definitely so, so beneficial. So another really good one. Thank you. And what is your one top general life tip?
Well, I mean, this is maybe a personal one, but for me, I've benefited from having a great coach in my life, and I'm always interested in why I'm doing things. I'm interested at the moment why we write songs. It's been my big research project. I think why is always goes back to how. And for me, I've discovered that the thing that I love to do is learn. And so when I'm unsure about situations, whatever they may be, I realized, well, if I'm learning from this, then that's okay. I'll invest my time and energy. And I think of that on a personal level as well as a career level, because you know, we have to obviously think about how we pay our rent and all of the different forces upon us. But if I can be learning and if I know why I'm doing something, I can also take joy and pleasure in it.
Mm, that's good to know. And definitely even from our conversation today, it seems like researching and learning is definitely something that you love to do, and a good piece of advice for anyone that's wanting to improve a certain skill.
I think so. I think it's very empowering as well. I've worked with thousands of young, particularly female songwriters, and hundreds of young female songwriters have come to me and said, for example, oh, you know, I've been told at 24 that I'm too old to make a career in the music industry. I mean, it's just something that drives me crazy. And they'll say, what shall I do? And I would say in that situation, I would say, well, if you feel able, go back and ask why. So keep asking why, you know, because very often the things that we're being asked to do, whether that we don't want to do, whether they're logistical or creative or commercial or whatever, there isn't a reason. Or there's a reason which is based on something that is either not pleasant or is a nonsense or whatever. And I think it's very empowering, particularly, you know, if you want to be more empowered because aspects of your identity might be, you know, holding you back. If you just keep going back and saying, well, why?
Yeah. A really good good thing there, and yeah, something that I will be more conscious of as well, is to ask why and to find out and dig a little bit deeper. So thank you so much, Sophie. It's been so lovely chatting to you. And
my absolute pleasure.
Yeah. And I feel like I've kind of started to see the songwriting process in a different way after our conversation. So I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Lovely to meet you. I'm here for you whenever you want to ask me any questions, you know, or indeed anyone listening to your podcast.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And I hope you have a good rest of your day.
And you.
My biggest three takeaways from the episode with Sophie was firstly, to get yourself a beautiful little book that you can keep with you at all times to capture ideas as you get them rather than trying to jot them down at a later date. My second biggest takeaway was that the more we give in to writer's block and the more we give it a persona, the more we are afraid of it. So to try and let go of it and continue to be creative rather than focus too much on it. My last takeaway was to read Big Magic Creative Living by Liz Gilbert, especially if you are struggling to find creativity in your life. That's it from us this week. I hope you enjoyed the episode and we look forward to seeing you again in 2 weeks.